This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
Welcome to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we're joined by Catrice Barnes. Catrice, how are you?
Good, and how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Thank you so much. I'm super, super excited to talk with you. You've been busy the last couple months. You've got a new project to tell us all about, and I was wondering just how do you feel? I know that you're coming down off of a whirlwind of work that you've been doing and working on. How do you feel?
Well, you know, we're musicians. We're creative people, so sometimes work doesn't feel like work. It's enjoyable because
Absolutely. You're
creating, you're playing with people you love to play with. So, I mean, I don't feel like it's overwhelming.
If you understand
what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You love what you do, so it's work, but it's not work.
I mean, it's work when, and there are aspects that are work, but when it comes together, it's just, can be so magical. Like one show I did recently, I mean, just to see people's faces after the show was like worth all the time you spend learning songs or transcribing or whatever you're doing. And that was at the Say It Loud concert at the Apollo Theater with Christian McBride.
Yes. I know this is probably a weird question, but do you ever find yourself getting nervous when you're about to perform? I know that you've been at it for so long, but do you still get those nervous jitters right before you're set to perform?
Not so much anymore. It also might depend on the feeling of the audience. Like, if the audience feels like they're going to be harder to reach, there might be a feeling of discomfort, but never nerves. Like, you can tell an audience that's ready to receive your music, and then there's an audience that's like, prove it to me. That's not fun. You know, they're the ones with their legs and arms crossed.
Yes. Very unreceptive.
Yeah, okay. Great.
So. What, you know, your music, I mean, it's so amazing, and people, you know, it resonates with people of all walks of life. What is it that, you know, inspires you and that helps you to continue to craft your art and to share it with the world?
Well, I think early on I realized I was supposed to be doing music, and I've been following that passion ever since. You know, everybody seems to have stories where things shaped their lives, and then the next thing they knew, they were doing what they felt is their calling. Like, I just recently talked to someone who completely changed their career midlife, and she's completely happy. And I was like, wow, I've never had anything pop up for me like that. So I'm just assuming I'm supposed to be doing it. That's the best answer for me, because nothing's telling me to stop.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, it's hard for a lot of people to find what they truly love to do and to combine it with, like, their life's work. And I think if you have something that you're good at and that you enjoy doing, and you're able to make it, you know, not only make a living doing it and also make it your life's work, I think it's just so rare and beautiful, because so many people, they just they don't get that opportunity. And I always find it fascinating when people, you know, such as yourself, when they have this thing that they're so passionate about. Like, your music, it actually speaks to the soul. And I think that it's amazing that, you know, I'm sure you have days that are, you know, bad. I'm sure you have bad days and good days. But I think overall, I think that your music shows, you know, not only your perseverance through those bad days, but it also shows that you really love what you're doing, and this is like your way to give back to the world. So I love it.
Thank you. Well, it's a different time now than it was when I was starting. I mean, there were more clubs, more radio stations, more recording sessions, studios. So it was a lot more places where somebody could, say, play full time. And, you know, with the digital age, as it keeps growing, those opportunities are becoming fewer and fewer. So it's going to be interesting to see how people sustain themselves, say, being musical in the future.
Absolutely. And this is something that I love to do. I love to pick, you know, artists' brains about, you know, what they feel or think about, you know, living in this digital age and, you know, most of the music that you put out, you know, coming out digitally. Are you a fan of it or do you kind of dislike it?
I mean, of course there's going to be somebody, there's always somebody who's just completely gifted and no matter what they do, it's going to sound great. But for the most part, I think people are missing out on the challenge of collaborations more so because you can do everything yourself. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. It came out last week.
I plan to see it.
Not trying to plug it, but if you see how they fed off of each other, the fights they had over different phrases and lyrics and what's going to be the single. And I mean, it was such a team effort, and it created a sound. It wasn't one guy just sitting in front of a computer. And the end result was so much classic music. And that's not coming out in the same, I'd say, in droves like it did in the past. And I do think that even if you're doing a recording session for someone else, like, I mean, sometimes I used to go do two or three recording sessions for three different people in one day. When you walk into that studio, you're on somebody else's turf. You have to get into their head about what they want, not about you anymore. And I think that is a tool for development for any creative person. You're learning more. It's like learning on the job without even knowing it.
Absolutely. No, you hit on something there. I mean, I think, like you said, there's, you know, like they say, experience is the best teacher. You know, that's in this case, and it really is, you know, because, you know, there's just, you can't take away that aspect of learning through interaction with other people, you know.
Right. And it's something, you know, I always say even the worst sessions, I learned something from everyone. The worst gigs, even if it's what not to do. And a lot of that isn't happening anymore. So music's like a language. You got to keep building, finding more new words.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is. It's a living, breathing language. And, that's what's so beautiful to me about the art form, you know, of music. This is another probably random and weird question, but has there ever been a time in your career where you've struggled to, I guess, to navigate the new terms of this language, this new musical language? By that, I mean you, like you said, you know, you have been doing this for a while, and you know, now we're in this digital age. Was it hard for you to, I guess, make the jump from, I don't want to say analog to digital, but, you know, like, was it hard for you to make the jump from what you knew to what it is now?
Well, actually, when I started was when the digital age was actually developing, because my first recording, we used drum machines. I mean, we would incorporate like live elements too, but it wasn't completely. I mean, it was with synthesizers, and I mean, I knew how to program synthesizers, so it made it easier for me because I knew the language of synthesizers to start working digitally. I wasn't, say, it wasn't completely foreign to me.
Right on. I assumed like you had, I guess, a full band for many of your recordings, and I feel really, really silly now.
That's okay. No. I mean, we would always have live elements, but we use a lot of drum machines.
Ah. Well, I mean, you fooled me.
And I'm not even saying that's good. I'm just saying that's what we did because we were trying to have a hit record.
Absolutely. So when you're preparing for a record and you're gearing up to record, do you have any like rituals or things that you do to kind of help you to get into the frame of mind that you need to accomplish this feat? Because I know that even with today's technology, you know, recording an album, if you're going to do it right and you're going to put your heart and soul into it, you know, it is work. How do you prepare?
I don't really have a system. I don't really have a system, but I can say once I'm in the middle of working on something, if it's just not vibing, I'll stop for the day. And then wait for another day to feel inspired. I won't just keep working on stuff because, oh, I'm working on something today.
Yeah. It's crazy that you said that, but it's actually poignant because a lot of people feel like busy is better. But sometimes it's like you can be busy just spinning your wheels and you're really not accomplishing anything because you're not being as productive because you're just going through the motions. So it's like it's better to wait to where you can really focus and put everything into it. That way it's more productive in the end, I guess.
Well, one thing, the technology and the way the social media, if you don't have a team, most people will understand what I mean when I say this. You're doing a lot of work yourself just to keep yourself out there or keep, you know, trying to promote shows and this and that and that and that if you don't have tons of money. So you end up doing a lot of work by yourself or for yourself. So
yeah,
maybe I would... Huh?
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of people don't know that it is a DIY culture, you know, do it yourself, and
yeah,
it's one of the many misconceptions of the music industry that people just they have no clue, you know.
So busy could also mean really doing a lot of the work to make yourself viable, connecting to the right people. So I mean, it doesn't always necessarily mean I just wrote a new song today.
I see. Yeah, wearing those multiple hats, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, the sad thing is not every creative person is designed to wear all those hats.
Yeah, that's true. Because I do notice that a lot of times it's kind of like you know, separation of church and state, you know, the more artistic a person is, usually the less, you know, business-minded they are. And
yes. Oh, yes. And and that part has changed. And that's kind of sad, too, because going back to the Queen movie, I think if you had left it alone, let's say Queen alone, they would not have been a super group. But with the help of management and booking a tour, I can't imagine those guys doing all that work and then booking their own tour. But nowadays, you have to do your own music and book your own tour. And if you don't have that brain, it's not going to happen.
It's brutal, man. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's really strange, you know, how things have really changed. And in some retrospects, the digital age has kind of like leveled the playing field so that you don't have to wait on a label or somebody to come, you know, rescue you. But at the same time, it's also made it's a long journey for a lot of artists. And it's, I can see where people, you know, have misconceptions about it, and they just have no clue that, you know, there's so much more that goes into, you know, the pursuit of your dream, your music, and getting it out there to the world.
Yeah. And it's still the labels are holding court on the top, I'd say, money-making artists.
Yeah, so yeah, that's true.
So that, yeah.
We've got Prince. I think Prince is, Prince would be, you know, a current example, I would imagine, with his estate. I think, if I'm correct, I believe that there are some things that are unsettled, you know, with his estate that,
uh-huh.
you know, the label still has a hand in.
Yeah, I'm talking more about the top 10, 20 records usually are still signees of a label of some sort.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, usually the top 10 artists, Billboard-wise, are usually attached to some label.
Mm-hmm. I know some artists who make a living, do their own record, but, you know, they're playing for 50, 100 people a night. But they make a comfortable living.
Oh, wow. Man, oh, man.
So that's the indie artist scene, whereas getting past that, it still requires some kind of promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's an interesting time.
Yeah, it sure is.
And that means you have to fit their format. And the formats are more narrow. I think less musical. And talk about isms.
You know, to me, and I might be wrong, but I kind of feel like formats hurt creativity as well, you know, because in artistry, because like you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, you know, and I just don't know that. I mean, I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like it kind of takes away from it, you know, and it kind of just gives this generic, oftentimes it gives a generic, you know.
Yeah, well, the formats nowadays are four-bar loops.
Yep.
There's not much room for musicality after a certain point.
Very true, very true, very true.
So, and then if somebody were to pop up and do something that was not in that sound, the people who've been listening to that over and over for years might find that other music strange. strange now.
Yeah, yeah. People's minds aren't as open because they've been programmed.
Right,
like,
now,
you know,
yeah. Now they might even turn the channel.
I feel like we're due for a musical revival, and you know, similar to like what Nirvana did in the 90s, you know, where, you know, there's just this new breakout sound of, you know, or sounds, but I don't even know how it would happen. I mean, I feel like with the digital age that we live in now, it's easier for like grassroots stuff to catch on.
Even be from a movie, because I've been, you know, hearing Bradley Cooper on many playlists now, so
yeah.
So maybe there'll be a great soundtrack that pushes everyone to play it or something.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, because I think it, you know, we're long overdue for one. I just would hope that people's minds and hearts are receptive to it, you know, because, yeah, we're definitely long overdue for one.
For sure.
I want to jump ahead, and I want to talk about, you know, your project, Welcome to My House. Tell me a little bit about it. Tell our audience about it.
Well, Welcome to My House is a work in process, I should say. I've been doing it now for, almost 2.5 years. And actually, it was designed to be that vehicle for the up-and-coming artists who would not be played on the radio, who are doing writing and singing in a classic song way. You know, they're not the auto-tuned person. They use acoustic instruments, or, I mean, it doesn't have to be all acoustic instruments, but they're just writing good songs. And have fewer places to present their music. And that's how the idea was triggered, like, oh, I could do something in my living room. And then it just kind of evolved after that, where eventually when I do get the funding and the support, the idea is just to go to different people's living rooms and bring their favorite artists and do their favorite songs. And it's not designed, say, for it to be celebrity-driven. It's really designed for those lost singer-songwriters out there who people know, people are fans of, like, locally, and they're all over the country. I mean, people send me emails all the time. I mean, they're just not in New York, where they have great songs, but they're not really getting the push or support to go any, I'd say, further, but local. So that was the catalyst for the show.
Patrice, I love it. I think it's ingenious, for one thing. But I love it because it gives these artists a platform, you know, to connect with the world and to get their music out there.
And the house band is Chamber Fusic, which is a unit I call Chamber Fusic because it's going to be every artist is going to be backed by a string section, percussions, and other acoustic instruments in the living room, because chamber music used to be in living rooms, used to be a place where people performed for, I'd say, the elite or royalty. And now we're just doing it for the elite and royalty, which is regular people.
Absolutely.
And but the thing is, they have to be able to hang with performing live and doing a one take because we get together on Sunday or whatever day it is around 5, and then we go live at 7. So it's not like we have had weeks of rehearsal.
Man,
so what you see is after about an hour or so of rehearsal.
I love it, too, because in addition to, you know, the history of, you know, people performing and, you know, being part of the elite initially, there was something more cozy and more intimate and connecting and inviting living room performances. And I think that you extending this, and I think it's beautiful, and I think it resonates really well with, you know,
How can
artists contact you or, you know, become invited or become involved with this project?
Oh, they can go to the website and just shoot me over an email and their links, and I can see if they, you know, fit, if they're, first of all, if they're nearby and if it kind of fits the flow of the show. I mean, because I don't really have profanity, I don't have this, I don't have that. So people's music is so electronic, I don't see how we're going to convert it. You know, so I have to really... And another thing, it's not like I'm against hip-hop. I just think hip-hop has more vehicles. And my idea was to create vehicles for people who, you know, write full songs and melodies. And I get mostly hip-hop artists reaching out to me.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and I'm just like, well, there are more vehicles for hip-hop right now.
Yeah, that is true.
So that wasn't the initial intention. So it's not like I'm anti-hip-hop. It's just unless they're incorporating more arranging, more like some vocals, I probably would not have a hip-hop artist on.
Understandably, yeah. Because I guess going back to, you know, languages, you know, comparing music to, you know, language, I guess hip-hop would be considered today's Queens language because it's so commonplace, you know, amongst the culture.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and there are many places for people to, I mean, I had a guy group who, I would say they were like a modern-day version of Simon and Garfunkel. Where are they going to get played? Nowhere, probably, on the radio. Whereas a good hip-hop artist can get played in a club, I mean... Just more vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. I mean, and that's what's so strange about today, just in this digital era. You know, like you said, an artist that, you know, has a similar sound to Simon Garfunkel, you know, a lot of times they're great, but they're just overlooked because, you know, it's a sound that people aren't, you know, readily accustomed to, you know, these days. And so I think that's what's so great about your platform is that it really helps to get the word out about those artists, you know?
Yeah. And I also, too, think a lot of rappers are lyricists, but when you're sampling, it's just not the same as composing.
You know, you're right. You are right. Because, I mean, essentially, I'm ignorant to the process, but I would imagine that sampling is just basically curating from artists that have already, you know, put the song out, correct?
I mean, it's a mixture because even there are people who use, like, Fruity Loops and things, and they just combine loops until it feels right. I know this because I've done it too.
You
know? I've had to make beats myself. But But I know the difference between doing that and composing, because I can do that too. And I think it's a different brain you use. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it does. It's not that easy to write a classic beat, you know, that hit beat. It's not like, because if it were easy, everybody'd be doing it. But it's still a different brain than, you know, say composing, writing music for a band, writing all the instruments.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I got this is totally random, but I got a visual of you wearing like these big like headphones while you were doing your beat.
Doing my beat? Oh yeah. You know, I can pull out the pack too. Like when you know people get what was it? Reason at one time. I don't use Reason anymore. I use Logic. But with Reason, I mean, you could just pull up these files. Loops and add different things, and next thing you know, it's your beat.
Holy smokes!
What?
I said, "Holy smokes!" I had no idea.
And everybody listening knows what I'm saying, but very few people get the challenge of having to write a piece of music for a full group without loops from just your head.
That is true. You've got a point there. You do have a point there. Man.
So, or just your instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Like a chord progression without, you know, a sample.
Yep, that's right.
I mean, just think about all the innovative chord progressions that were written. I mean, I remember meeting this arranger who used to do arrangements back in the 40s, I think he was. And he said that how they would even test their arrangement is they would hire a big band for $25.
What?
That's the way they would know how they arrange. They'd have to hire a
wow.
big band just to hear what their arrangement sounded like, and then they would make changes. Now you can just put all the samples in and hear if you're making how your arrangement sounds. So, because all of them were writing their arrangements without even touching the piano. And I'm like, how do you guys write without even touching the piano? That's like, that's a different skill.
Yes, most definitely.
I was like, wait a second, I don't even have to touch the piano. Like, wow, how'd you do that?
Hold the mustard.
Yeah, because they developed their ear and their skill. Yeah.
So this is another weird question, but do you think that, you know, certain skill sets have, like, atrophied because we've
yes.
been, you know, with...
That's the perfect word, atrophy. And then inspiring people to get the muscle back. I mean, it's going to be in baby steps, I think, because nobody really wants to work that hard.
Oh, no way, no way.
So, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to do my little part by having, you know, music sound this way in living rooms. Oh, look, it's a miracle. And I didn't want it just to be like a guitar or a piano. I wanted it to be like, feel like an orchestra or a unit backing everyone. Because, you know, the singer, songwriter in the cafe kind of gets... I mean, I'm happy for people to go out and play and be able to come home with a living from doing that. But that's, for me, that wasn't just enough to bring somebody in my living room and just have them do, just play guitar. Like, let's have a string section. Let's have, like, an orchestra. So down the road, I hope to have, like, you know, a French horn section in the kitchen and, you know, maybe a timpani in someone's bedroom.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Yeah. That's the idea, though, to have different instruments all over the house and filming it.
Do you have any plans to, because I know, like, right now you're really kind of hoping to connect more with, like, local artists. Do you have any plans to do, I guess, to do more national artists, like, in the months and years to come?
You know, just like I said, you know, hip-hop has more vehicles. Same thing with national artists. They have the vehicles. It really wasn't designed for them. I mean, maybe an occasional one, but I think it almost comes off a little corny if every week it's the person in the top 10. I mean, it's really designed to feature people either on the cusp or relatively unknown. It's more of a vibe that way. And, I mean, Maroon 5 does not need my living room. Even if I had a major network, they don't need my living room, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You got a point there. You have a point there.
And I think when it's songs people really haven't heard before, they listen a little bit more. And I've had people say things like, I've never listened to music like this before, and I'm going to do more of it.
Very good point. That is a very good point indeed.
So, I guess as long as I'm in charge of the show, that's what I'll be pitching. But I know, you know, in the hands of people who think all business, they're going to definitely want the celebrity factor, you know. But it's not. I mean, I know probably I could get some quick ratings if I could get somebody in the top 10 to do it. But I will say initially it was not designed for that.
Absolutely. I was wondering, what other projects are you working on that you could tell us about?
Well, it's funny, because of Welcome to My House and Chamber Fusic, I'm now doing gigs with Chamber Fusic Live.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm doing one in Florida. Ooh, I wish I had all the information, but I don't. But you can always go to my website or Twitter page, and I'll announce that some part of Florida, I think February 1st, I'll be playing at some college. I'm not sure which one. And some stuff, I've been doing some workshops and probably more chamber freezer gigs in South Carolina. So I'll be popping up in different states.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, where can what are your social media handles? Because I found you on Twitter, but for our listening audience, what is your Twitter handle?
Catrice Barnes, Twitter.
Super easy. And then I'm thinking your website is
www.catrice.com. I got it early.
Yes, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
And then Facebook, either Catrice or Catrice Barnes. But the page where I announce more of the show is on Catrice Barnes, so.
Right on.
Instagram is CatBeast2012. That's the only
thing. Yeah, your Instagram's kind of weird because I was tagging you, and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. I don't think you can change it. I would change it if I could.
I completely understand. Well, Catrice, I want to thank you so much for coming on today's show, and I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to open the floor if there's anything else you'd like to say to our listening audience.
I don't know. Just keep you know, tuning in and supporting the effort, the more you subscribe and view, it helps me out. So, and in essence, helps the music and other artists out as well.
I love it. I love it. Catrice, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Guys, that was our exclusive interview with Catrice Barnes. You can check out the link to her website in the body of this post. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We're also available for iPhone users. If you've got an Apple product or iPhone of any type, you can find us in the iTunes store. Just search for our name. Once you search for our name, you can download the app. You can listen all free of charge. We're also available for Android users. If you've got an Android phone, you can search for us in the, I believe it's the Android Market Store or also the Google Play Store. Search for us. Just search for our name. And once you search for that name, you can download our app all free of charge. Last but not least, we're available on Roku. If you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can actually watch this interview right in the privacy of your own home. We have over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews all free of charge. From the Roku Channel Store, just search for our name. Once you search for our name, you can download the app. It begins streaming all free of charge. We're also available on YouTube. I always forget YouTube. Just search for our name, Witten Radio. Hit the subscribe button. We've got some news from the Associated Press coming up, so stay with us.
The Punisher, a firearm-wielding vigilante, was pulled from New York Comic Con by Marvel and Netflix, something Steve Harsh, who's been attending for years, understands.
I do kind of agree with that, out of respect for the victims and for the situation.
But another attendee, Leo Lawrence, says the Punisher didn't cause the Vegas shooting.
That's only punishing the fans. And it's only letting the idiot that did it win.
Punisher or not, security here is tight, with the NYPD's heavily armed anti-terrorism unit standing guard. At the Jacob Javits Convention Center in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.